Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It is the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 5th of October 2021. Happy Tuesday to you. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. Yes, appropriately named. They named the show after me and then they hired me, which is a lie since I created the show. But anyway, lame attempt at a joke. Welcome to the program. Lots of stuff to get to. As always, Sandy Cortez will make an appearance. Always a big hit when she does. You can get the Curse program, the Weekend Heaven Review, and your chance to win a signed copy of Trump's Enemies by Corey Lewandowski and David Blasi, signed by both of them, at patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast. That's patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast. Also, don't forget to check out Life Change Tea, the tea that will change your life. You go to getthetea.com to get the tea. That's a convenient way to get it. How do I get that tea? You go to getthetea.com. Tea cleans you out, keeps you regular, gets you going, and allows you to have more energy because your body is now free of all the garbage that's clogging it up and blocking your body's ability to absorb the nutrition in the food that you consume. Go to getthetea.com, choose your flavor, enter promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at checkout, and you get free fast shipping on top of everything else. It's win, 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 win. So patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast to enter the contest, and getthetea.com to clean yourself out and get more energy. That's right. Now let's get on with the show. Looking at all the things we've got to get to today and then the options to get to, and China going after Taiwan. Of course, China's going after Taiwan. There's a new interview with the, I guess at this point you got to call her the former ambassador from Afghanistan to the United States, because it's a woman. I don't think that they're going to keep her. And she'd be incredibly stupid to go back to Afghanistan. But she's out there saying, you know, we'll never trust the United States. I don't think we'll trust the United States again. It's a problem that the Biden administration just kind of threw women to the wolves. Now, that was an interview with Axios on HBO, I think. So it probably won't get a lot of play. The media has an amazing, uncanny ability to ignore whatever is inconvenient for them. But it is interesting to note that the guy will paint himself as a feminist. Oh, he's a hero. Just ask him when he's coherent. But in reality, it's always something different. Never trust anybody who tells you they are something. If you sit there, if you have to tell somebody you are something, you aren't. If you're telling people, I care about women's rights, I'm a feminist, you're not a feminist. You're an opportunist. Period. End of story. You know, nothing wrong with, don't lie about it. That's just what you are. If you got to tell people you're funny, oh, I'm very funny. I'm going to be very funny for you. No, just be funny. All right? We'll get it. If you're funny, if you're actually funny, we'll get it. If you're smart, if you're really smart, we'll get it. Otherwise, we sit there and hear you go, I'm super funny and smart, and then you're not funny or smart. You don't even get the benefit of the doubt. You're actually raising the bar. This is a pro tip for anybody out there. You're raising the bar to a level that you can't reach because you don't have the skills. And Joe Biden doesn't have the skills to be president of the United States. He screwed up, you know, not content to screw over his own people, he decided to go international, which, you know, personally, I'm a little bit thankful for, because it did give us a break from being screwed over by Joe Biden. Yeah, short as it was, we did at least get a little bit of time to go, God, this guy sucks. We can exhale for a moment. He's screwing up Afghanistan, and now he's back to us. Here we go. It is funny watching these leftists fight, argue, whine, moan in this country. Because I tell you, that stuff about Afghanistan, ambassador, they don't care. The left isn't going to care. What they care about is all they care about, and that is spending money. Spending money is power to the left. Taking actually, it's not even the spending of money so much that they really enjoy. It is the taking of money from the people who earn it. That's where the real power comes in. Getting to decide how much of the money people earn, those people are going to be allowed to keep, is really something to, I imagine it's got to feel a lot like you're a god. It has to. You look at people and you go, I can throw you in jail. I will take as much of your money as you want, as I want. And if you don't comply, I can have you thrown in jail. I can have all of your stuff taken. I can have you will be presumed guilty. The IRS is one of those things where you are presumed guilty until you prove your innocence. It's one of the few areas, aside from public opinion, where that is the setup. And being able to write the laws and the rules and the regulations that govern that body, my God, that power has to go right to your head. That's what Democrats are doing. That's what Democrats are fighting over. It's amazing to me is that Democrats haven't been able to get their act together to pass this reconciliation bill yet. And the argument is that it's too big. Nobody's arguing. Nobody on the Democratic side is arguing they shouldn't be doing this. I'd like to point that out, that there is no constitutional question, no constitutional pause on the Democratic side. They don't seem bothered by, gee, should the federal government be paying for child care for Americans? No question about that. It's now accepted truth that the federal government owes that to us. Which is weird, because then you have to wonder, how the hell did we as a species survive for so long without the government providing us these things? You know, pre-K, they want your kids starting at age three and four, universal pre-K, they say. That's going to be wildly important, universal pre-K. They also kind of bill that as part of child care. So, well, if you can get child care, you know, for pre-K, that's basically like babysitting. And then if it were like babysitting, then it wouldn't be, you know, 9 to 3 or whatever school hours are where you live. It would be whenever you go to work to whenever you're done with work. It's just almost convenient, but not quite convenient. So spare me this. It's like childcare. It's 2 more years of indoctrination. 2 more years of indoctrination that, by the way, the government has been doing for some time under a little program called Head Start. Head Start, like, oh, this is so great. It was designed to give poor kids a leg up. It was designed, and of course it spread. It was billed originally as we need to help poor kids, as most things government does. We need to help poor people. We need to do this. We need to do that. And then they start doing it, and mission creep comes in. And they start doing more and start doing more and start doing more. And soon they're well beyond whatever it was, the small little targeted slice of America that they were allegedly going to help. And now they're not helping anybody in America, but they're not helping everybody equally, quite equitable. But during the Obama administration, and this is a real testament to how awful government is and how worthless government is. During the Obama administration, the Department of Education did a study after 20 plus years of Head Start. They wanted to see how much of a difference it made, because not every kid had access to Head Start. Most kids didn't have access to Head Start, but a lot of kids did. And so they wanted to compare the kids who'd gone through Head Start to the kids who had not gone through Head Start to see whether or not there was a... What they really wanted to do was see how big of a benefit there was to Head Start. They wanted to do what they're trying to do now. They wanted to make an argument for universal pre-K expanding Head Start. It's so wildly important, we must expand Head Start. And so they commissioned this study in the Department of Education. But a funny thing happened on the way to Utopia. The study came back and showed that there is zero benefit, nothing to Head Start. That in kindergarten and first grade, the kids who had Head Start did actually, you know, they'd already had 2 years of colors and cutting circles out of paper and writing letters and whatever. And so immediately out of the box, they certainly had a leg up. But by the third grade, all benefits that had been measured earlier were gone. Now, you can decide for yourself, and we don't know, that wasn't figured out, whether or not the kids who came in from Head Start were slowed down, or the kids who came in just at kindergarten were sped up to catch up to it. Whatever the case was, by third grade, any benefits from Head Start were gone. They were gone. There were no long-term benefits. There were no anything. It was a complete and total waste of money, so much so that the Obama administration kind of stopped their push for universal pre-K. Their arrow that was going to be their silver bullet, silver arrow, whatever, was worthless, was bent, was done. They couldn't do it. But Democrats never stop pushing for things. They never stop pushing for things, for anything. So as part of this $3.5 to $5.5 trillion spending debacle, Democrats have right in there, hey, let's do universal pre-K. Universal pre-K. Moreover, let's do free community college too. Let's just keep going with the free. Of course, there's no such thing as free. We will have to pay for it. Period. End of story. But honestly, college isn't for everybody. Universal free community college is just a stepping stone, by the way, for universal four-year college. So don't think that this is just going to be the end of it. No matter what they say, they're lying to you. But that being said, college isn't for everybody. A large percentage of people, you want to talk about the student loan crisis, for example, a large percentage of people who are suffering and under crushing student loan debts are people who were wildly unprepared to go to college. It's just a simple fact of reality, of math, of science. They went to school because they were told to go to school. They went to school because that seemed like the thing to do. And when you're 17, 18 years old, you don't have a damn clue what you're going to do with your life. But for some reason, we've put it into people's heads that they do need to know that they're going to do with their lives. And what they really should do is go to college. Now, whether or not you want, what if you want to be a welder or a mechanic? You don't need to go to college for that. Your best bet would be to go to a trade school or go out and get an apprenticeship right away and start working at it. It's not for everybody. But if it's quote-unquote free, why not? A lot of that college loan debt that I was talking about is people who went to college because they were supposed to go to college. And they dropped out. They flunked out, whatever it is. After a couple of years, they racked up a ton of debt. It's weird how these universities and colleges will allow people for exceedingly long periods of time to come in and, oh, you're failing. It's not for you. But don't worry. How about you try a different major? How about you try that? Because they're getting paid one way or another. You're getting screwed. They're getting paid. They couldn't care less. But that's a part of the problem, is a whole bunch of people who shouldn't be going to college, who aren't cut out for college, at least not at that point, going to college and racking up massive debt. I was one of those people, ladies and gentlemen. I speak from experience. That's the difference between this show and pretty much every other show out there, is that given my resume, it's actually a novel, more than 70 jobs and my background, I've pretty much done everything you can possibly imagine, short of killing a guy that I would mention or admit to. But I went to college right out of high school. Why? I have no idea. I honestly have no idea. I was ill-prepared for it. I went because I didn't know what to do. My parents came from a generation where, and they told me that basically the plan was graduate high school, get a job, retire. That's it. I mean, there's stuff in between, but that was it. My dad had worked one job since he was 22, 21 years old, something like that. Or maybe he was 19. Yeah, he was 19 because he retired when he was 49. So it was, that was the plan. You could do that back when my parents were young. You can't do that now. You can't come close to doing that now. So I knew that wasn't for me. I just always knew that that wasn't for me. I'd done a bunch of jobs that I didn't like, and I wanted to do something more, but I didn't know what. And I certainly wasn't mentally prepared for it. So I went to school to Wayne State University, which is in downtown Detroit. I went there because it was $20 to apply. They actually came to our high school. I remember they were sitting in Mr. McKenzie's office. He was my counselor. And you went in with your, my dad gave me a check for $20. You go in there with your application. They have your transcripts or whatever. All you needed was a 2.0 to get in. It was like shooting low. I handed them the thing. They looked at the stuff and they said, "You're in. Welcome. Thanks." And that was it. And I also applied to Eastern Michigan University, but I couldn't commute to that. And there was no way I was going to be able to afford room and board. So that was not in the cards. It was only $20. But I went. I just took whatever classes I felt like taking. There was no guide. There's no, we want to talk about guidance being worthless. My guidance counselor was worthless. Nice guy. Used to pull me out of class talking about my brother because my brother was a really good athlete. What's Kirk up to? But I just floundered. I took acting classes. I basically took the curriculum of a theater major my first year. I think it was maybe a year and a half that I went. I had a small scholarship from my elementary school, and tuition was really, really cheap. And I went, and I think it was halftime, and I just didn't do anything. I didn't know what I was doing. And I dropped out, ran out of money, whatever, the combination of the both, and gave up hope. And it wasn't until I was like 23 or something that I went back. When I figured out that I, you know, was roofing, and that was like, is this really what I want to do with my life? And it wasn't. I wanted to do something more. And so I ended up getting, once you get a certain age, you can actually qualify for financial aid. I couldn't qualify for financial aid before, even though I was independent. But once you're of a certain age, you can. And then it was game on. I went to school, majored in political science, and the rest is history-ish. But I would have been a disaster had I stuck with college right out of high school. I was rudderless and going through the motions. It's not for everybody. Making it free, quote-unquote, to go to community college for everybody will just prolong the inevitable of you need to start living your life. You need to start figuring things out. You need to start taking some responsibility for your actions. And as I've said before, and will continue to say, so much, if not pretty much all, of the Democratic Party, the way it's currently constituted, is designed explicitly to prevent that. To disallow that, to not have any sense of personal responsibility. They are your personal pope. They will absolve you of any and everything. It's a horrible disaster, awful way to run your life, but it's a fairly effective way to run your party because people, it turns out, desperately would love to be absolved for their shortcomings and stupidities. Sad but true. So if you've been listening to the news, you've seen these Democrats running around going, not enough money. Oh, we couldn't. Now, Joe Manchin, it's kind of funny because these Democrats for what? 3 months have been saying, Joe Manchin won't say what he wants. Why won't he just say what he wants? He won't say what's acceptable to him. And it's partially his fault. But he had given Chuck Schumer months ago a letter laying out specifically what he would be for and what he would be against. Where, like, I need or can only vote for up to $1.5 trillion in new spending. That was its cap. And yet this whole time, Democrats were going $3.5 to $5.5 trillion. And this is, I can see why they did it, why the Democrats did it, why the Democratic leadership did it. They're sitting around going, if we get everybody worked up, if we have the story for a long time, that it's going to be $3.5 trillion, really $5.5 trillion. And we end up with $1.5 trillion. We'll be able to go around, and if we know going in, that's all we're going to get. We can then bill ourselves as having made a massive compromise. Look at us. We are able, now it's compromising with themselves. I'm not sure how big of a compromise that is. I thought about having a juicy steak for dinner, and then I thought, well, I should really only have a salad. So I ended up having a steak and a salad. It was a major compromise amongst myself. No. But the media is in the tank for the Democrats. The general public who votes for Democrats are fairly stupid, so they could fall for this. It could work. So they got, I suspect that they thought, well, we can just, Joe Manchin's letter, he'll only do $1.5 trillion. So let's try and pressure him to get to $3.5 trillion or whatever. But even if we end up with just $1.5 trillion, we can still then run around. We'll win. It's okay. And we'll go around and say that we compromised. Now, how you compromise, quote unquote, compromise, matters. This isn't about the next 10 years. This is about the next 100 years. And Republicans need to recognize this, and Republicans in the media need to recognize this. The way that they got to the $3.5 trillion, that's really $5.5 trillion, is through the accounting gimmicks I've explained before. You say, well, 10 years of this program is going to cost $1 trillion. So let's start it in 5 years. And then we'll say, hey, it only costs $0.5 trillion. Yay, we've saved $0.5 trillion. When in reality, you've just postponed the spending. By the way, government estimates on spending are always way, way off. Way, way off. So you pull these accounting gimmicks. So if they end up with whatever they end up with, if they're able to pass something, if it isn't picking and choosing various programs that should that Democrats or progressives or whatever want in this bill, and they say, all right, well, we're just going to have to cut this Green New Deal stuff out of it completely and try and do that on its own. Unless they do that, it won't really be a victory. It could well end up being, and Republicans need to guard against this, the accounting gimmick. Because they can say, all right, we're going to start a program now. But no one can be hired for it and nothing can be done for it until 8 years out, 9 years out, 10 years out. Because they're setting a law that's going to cover the next 10 years. That same thing that moved that $1 trillion and made it into $0.5 trillion without changing anything except the start date can be used for everything. And once you get the programs in place, once you get the policies set, the money at that point doesn't really even matter. We're dealing with estimates here. And estimates are always wrong. They're always wrong in one direction. Just like the media was always wrong about reporting stories on Donald Trump and the making Trump look bad originally and then having to correct the record eventually. And the correction was never seen by anybody. Every government estimate, nobody ever goes, oh my God, that program was not only highly effective and efficient, but significantly less expensive than we originally had thought. We saved like 40%. No, it's not like a Black Friday sale. That's not the way the government works. Medicare, for example, passed in 1965, was estimated to cost in 30 years what it actually cost in 5. I'm going to repeat that again. It's hard to find this data out there, but you can find it. Medicare cost in 5 years what the estimates at the time of its passage said it would cost in 30 years. That's how government estimates work. Government always cooks its own books. But once you get, and see, this is why Democrats are so effective about this, because Republicans have sort of accepted this. Once you get a government program in place, what are you going to do? Not fund it? What are you going to do? Once the law is in place, once the bureaucracy is constructed, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy at that point, especially since the federal government just prints the money. It literally just prints the money. There's no downside to what the federal government is doing because they're just printing the money. There's no, we don't have to go back and raise taxes. Democrats love to raise taxes, but ultimately they don't have to raise taxes. They'll just print the money. We'll deal with the inflation later. That leads us to this, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. This is from Axios. This is terrifying. Not surprising. Not surprising. The headline is "The coin that could avert a federal debt default." The coin that could, well, you're like, what is it? Is it some, one of the first coins ever minted? Was it a drachma spent by Jesus or something? No. Axios reports an increasingly vocal chorus of commentators is saying that the U.S. Treasury should hashtag mint the coin, issue a small platinum token, give it a face value of $1 trillion, and then deposit it at the Federal Reserve. I'm going to repeat that just because it's so absurd. An increasing vocal chorus of commentators is saying that the U.S. Treasury should hashtag mint the coin, issue a small platinum token, give it a face value of $1 trillion, and then deposit it at the Federal Reserve. The gambit, if successful, would prevent the potentially catastrophic debt default that, thanks to congressional intransigence on both sides of the aisle, is looming fast. When a U.S. Treasury secretary is tasked with averting a fast-looming potential cataclysm, she has to consider all the possible options, even those that seem bizarre at first light. The Treasury Department has reportedly considered and rejected the platinum coin idea. Then again, Treasury Secretary Robert Rubin said in 1995 that using the Exchange Stabilization Fund to bail out Mexico would be impossible. He ended up doing exactly that just a few weeks later. So here's how it would work. This is insane. The Fed, once given the coin, would credit the Treasury's account with $1 trillion that would not count towards the national debt. See, they just, you do this in your business, the police are kicking in your doors. You're going to jail. Just forget it, you're going to jail. But the government goes, how about we just make it up? You sit there and you go, I'm going to write a check to myself for $100 million, and then I'm going to deposit that in my bank account, get a mortgage again. Forget it. You're going to jail by the time the ink dries on the check. The scheme works legally, looks legally feasible, although it would surely be challenged in the courts. Politically, however, it looks like a non-starter. The Democratic Party is capable of raising the debt ceiling through the reconciliation process, but refuses to do so for political reasons. They want Republicans to grapple with the fiscal reality of the bills they have already passed. Democrats control the White House and Treasury, neither of which seems to have more of an appetite than their congressional counterparts to let the country off the hook without Republicans somehow being involved. See, now you hear the looming debt crisis and the debt ceiling and the this and then that and the other thing. It's Democrats playing politics. They can raise that stuff on their own. That is not something, that is a financial matter, that is a fiscal matter that only needs 50 plus one, 51 votes. Vice President of the United States can break it. They don't need a single Republican. But they want multiple Republicans so they can spread the blame around. That's politics. That's pathetic. It's childish. But it's politics. Bloomberg executive editor Joe Wiesenthal, who was an invaluable FAQ on the issue, says that he's been coin-pilled since at least 2013. More recent converts include Nobel laureate Paul Krugman. God forbid if we listen to Paul Krugman. He's never been right about anything. Economist Dean Baker, former Mint director, blah, 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 goes through. Then, of course, Rashida Tlaib, Jerry Nadler. They all agree that the debt ceiling serves no useful purpose. It's a dumb political cudgel that risks triggering an unconstitutional and catastrophic default. The $1 trillion coin would effectively take that cudgel out of the hands of politicians, rendering them slightly less capable of causing a calamity through inaction alone. The other side, the $1 trillion coin would allow the government to spend money without borrowing it or raising it via taxation. That would be a dangerous precedent to set. That would be inflationary beyond anything you could possibly imagine. A dangerous precedent to set. It would be suicide. Even if it's legally sound, no one knows whether it's physically possible to mint a platinum coin between now and October 18th when the U.S. risks going into default. Maybe we'll find out at some point in the next few weeks. We could physically... Minting a coin on a platinum would be pretty easy. The federal government doing it could do it. It would just be wildly stupid and wildly self-destructive. When that story was tweeted out by Axios, I retweeted it, saying, why stop there? What could possibly go wrong? And then inserted a photograph of the infamous $100 trillion Zimbabwe banknote. Yes, somewhere in my boxes that I've never bothered to unpack, I probably have about $500 trillion. Maybe it's even, I don't even know what comes after a quadrillion. I have at least $500 trillion bill, $500 trillion bills. I'm rich, man. If Zimbabwe ever, well, they've already deflated their currency and wiped out this money and whatever. That's why you can get it for so cheap on, and that's, its only value is the hilarity of it. But if somehow it comes back into fashion, I'm rich. That becomes, I wonder if I can use it to buy Bitcoin. Probably not. But Zimbabwe was a disaster because they kept printing money to cover their spending. They couldn't get the economy going, so they started printing money, thinking, well, if we just throw the money around, then the economy will get going. That's not how it's how fires work, sure, but do you really want to set a massive fire if you got a little smoldering someplace and you just keep throwing gasoline around? Sooner or later, you're going to have a raging fire. That's not how economics works. That's not how monetary policy works. Monetary policy works on scarcity. The scarcity of currency gives it value. It gives it value, especially now since it's not pegged to the gold standard anymore. But if you just print it left and right, it has no scarcity and it diminishes its value. And you end up having inflation where people had, you know, Weimar Republic, people had to go and buy loaves of bread with barrels full of Deutschmarks. In Zimbabwe, it would take, you know, $500 trillion to get a sandwich. That sort of insanity. Why? Because they're printing it. It's not like there were only $300 trillion bills in circulation. There, it was as common as the dollar. It was actually worth less than the dollar at the time that it was in circulation because their monetary policy was so bad, so just straight up awful. And now they're advocating, well, if we just print the coin, we won't circulate the coin, but we'll mint the coin and we'll put it in there. And then the government can pretend that they have money. That's really what money has become, by and large, lately. It has become pretend. You're not seeing cash. When's the last time you dealt in a lot of cash or saw somebody dealing in a lot of cash? When I go to Costco and I see somebody paying in cash, it's weird. It's been that way. You know, it's been moving in that direction for a while, but with COVID, it really moved in that direction. So people aren't paying with cash. People aren't using cash. You still see signs where please use exact change, or you can use your credit card because we don't have change to make all this. I got a bunch of change. I should, if it was worth more than its face value, I'd sell it. But it's not worth rolling up for like $40 worth. It's like $40 is 500 pounds. Break the shocks in my car to go to the bank to give them that money. And then what? I'd rather just keep it and save the time for now. But it is insane what these people are doing. And they're just getting started, ladies and gentlemen. They're just getting started. And where they stop, well, I would say nobody knows, but they don't ever plan on stopping. So it doesn't really work that way. They're going to keep on rolling. Okay, so we've covered the ground of this ridiculous $3.5 trillion. And what the Democrats are really trying to do is they tell you they're trying to fundamentally transform the United States of America into a socialist welfare state, even more so than it already is. To this point, welfare has always been kind of for people who need it. I think most people would say I'm in favor of a hand up, but I'm not going to give people a way of life. You're going to have to, if you fall on hard times, I get it. But at some point, you got to pick yourself up and dust yourself off. And if you don't, that's on you. I'm not going to be responsible for it. And I'm not going to lose any sleep over your inability to take care of yourself. At some point, you got to be an adult. Sadly, a lot of people I went to high school with are that way. If they're perfectly happy, I don't care. You know, I don't know if they're on welfare. I think Michigan has at least they did have a law that able-bodied single men could not collect welfare. So I don't know if that's still the case. It wouldn't surprise me if that had been changed somehow. But that was the deal when I was a kid. So, you know, if you were a degenerate, you kind of had to find a way to support yourself in any event. And so, you know, that I think left a nice lane there for the functioning alcoholic. It's true. I think it was a nice, smooth, swervy, but there was a nice lane there for the functioning alcoholic. And now I don't know. It seems like the Democrats want to take that lane away from you by taking the responsibility away from you. Housing is a human right. Healthcare is a human right. Food is a human right. Everything, education is a human right. At which point is there a human responsibility? Where is the human responsibility? You got the government stepping in and going, we're going to take over feeding your kid breakfast and lunch. And we're going to do that at school. In fact, we're going to keep schools open year round to give your kid breakfast and lunch. And you're like, this is awesome. Somebody gets to sleep in every day. They don't have to worry about a kid whining at them that they don't have food. And by the way, between breakfast and lunch, it's not that long of a time. Why don't you stay playing out? Leave me alone, and I'll see you for dinner. Unless and until, of course, the schools start providing dinner. And you think, they'll never do that. They will do that. I bet you there are schools right now that are doing just that. That's how it works. You get the next generation thinking, good things come from government. Good things come from government. Bad things come from no government. Because if you have a bunch of, and all they're really shooting for is half the country. They don't need to convince 70% of the country. Hell, they don't even really have to convince half the country. They're lying about most of what they're doing. They just need to be given power. That's it. They need to get power, period, end of story. How they get it, they don't care. But you're going to have a generation of people who are not raised by their kids, but are not raised by their parents, but raised by government, fed by government. A lot of, sadly, a bunch of degenerate parents go, this is great. I don't have to do this anymore. And the kids go, good things come from government. Government takes care of me. Government takes care of you as a kid. Why can't government take care of you as an adult? Why shouldn't government take care of you as an adult? And that mentality sinks into the bone. And it stays there forever. It's nearly impossible to get out. Yeah, some people will be woken up, but not very many. So you look at this $3.5 trillion spending bill through that lens, and you recognize it's not really about the dollar amount, although the dollar amount is insane. It is about the control, ultimately. That's why they're throwing so many things in there. If these things, if these programs, if these plans, if these spending things were so damned important, they wouldn't be playing accounting gimmicks and saying, all right, we're not going to start this plan for 6 years because it's too expensive. So if we just have 4 years of it, we'll get under a $3.5 trillion cap. If those programs are wildly important to the very survival of your fellow Americans, they'd be calling for them to be started immediately. They're not. They're more concerned about the accounting gimmicks, which tells you what they're up to. It shows you what they're up to. Brian Riedel, who's a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, I used to work with him at the Heritage Foundation. He's one of those people who goes through the budget line by line. And he was on Twitter the other day. I guess it was 2 days ago. Says, progressive Twitter's new talking point is that $3.5 trillion reconciliation is nothing compared to $8 trillion for the Department of Defense over the next decade. He says, where to start? One, the Department of Defense budget has been shrinking for decades as a percentage of the budget and a percentage of the GDP, which is very true. Very true. And two, he says, has anyone specifically proposed cutting the Department of Defense $3.5 trillion to offset the bill? No, they haven't. He says, without a specific proposal to cut DOD by $3.5 trillion, that would leave an argument of, since we already pay $8 trillion for DOD per decade, then we can afford to spend $3.5 trillion on other things, which is the opposite of how budgeting trade-offs and scarcity work. But again, when you can just consider minting a $1 trillion platinum coin and putting it in a lockbox inside the Treasury Department and pretending, well, that's perfectly legitimate and everything is good, then nothing really matters. Nothing really matters. Speaking of someone to whom nothing really matters but has so much invested in this, remember, what Joe Biden is pushing for, by and large, is what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wants. Are you willing to let this 30-year-old idiot dictate the next 10 years of your life from a federal government policy? Joe Biden is. That's how desperate he is to hold on to power. He thinks that he can get ahead by appealing to these people. And so he's doing it. He has put the fate of our economy in the hands of a bunch of economic illiterate morons. Let that sink in. Listen to her. She was on MSNBC yesterday talking to Mehdi Hasan or whatever the hell his name is. I don't know. The guy blocked me on Twitter for reasons unknown. I'm sure I said something to him, but I mean, how thin-skinned do you have to be to block somebody on Twitter that can't even remember what they said to you? She whines about the money. Of course, she whines about the money. And she whines about there are some Democrats, not many, but some Democrats who are not particularly excited about spending $3.5 trillion more than the federal government is already going to spend. You got to remember, over the next, it's not as though we're not going to spend any money on social programs. We're going to spend tens of trillions of dollars over the next 10 years on anti-poverty programs, on all sorts of things. There's, you know, anti-poverty, Social Security, and Medicare, because that's what they're talking about expanding, as well as Medicaid. Tens of trillions of dollars, way more than the national defense, way more than in the Pentagon. But they don't ever talk about that. They act as though you either spend this money now or you will be just beating the poor about the head and neck. It's ridiculous. It's a lie. But it doesn't matter. They're not bound by reality. So AOC is upset that some members of her caucus are saying that they can't have what they want, that progressives are leading them on the pathway to hell. And she does some numbers here. She calls it math. It's not really math. It's just counting. I just want to illustrate you how dumb this person is.
New Jersey House Democrat Josh Gottheimer. He says you're part of a small far-left faction that, quote, blocked the president's agenda. And yet the president seems to be siding with you guys who didn't endorse him in the primaries over Gottheimer and co. who did, which is kind of amusing to me. What is your response to Congressman Gottheimer?
Well, I do math, and 95, which is the number of House Democrats or House progressives, is larger than 9, which is the number of Democrats who signed on to a letter threatening to sink the entire reconciliation bill back in August, demanding this vote this week.
I do math. That's not math. That's counting. That's just saying this number is bigger than that. That's not math. Can't just say, here's the number 12. All right. There, I've done math. Now you just said a number, all right? You got to add, subtract, divide, multiply. You got to do something to that number. with another number to be math. Otherwise, it's just counting. But that's who the Democrat leader is now. That's who it is. That's where they are. Earlier in the day, AOC was outside the United States Capitol, dancing around in front of an army of flying monkeys, an unthinking army of flying monkeys, talking about how $1.5 trillion is nothing. Like that she needs the $3.5 trillion because $1.5 trillion is nothing. She's not, again, not very bright.
Better than nothing.
Yeah, that's right.
Isn't something better than nothing? And you know what we have to say? I stood up in front of the caucus and I said, you know, that might be an easy thing for some of you all to say. Because when a bill passes that is underfunded, that only gives a crumb, you get that crumb.
Yep.
Because when you only give some and not all, then some people get nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. 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 Some people get nothing.
Yeah.
Who gets nothing? We get nothing.
Yep, we get nothing.
Yeah. So, you know, standing up there in that Capitol, and I was like, I don't know if y'all know yet by now, but I'm from the Bronx. When you tell me, isn't something better than nothing? What I hear, what you're actually telling me, isn't something for you better?
Yep. Yeah.
Isn't something for you better? And why don't you accept nothing so that I can get something?
Yeah.
That's what is actually being said.
Oh, yeah. I'm from the Bronx, okay? I mean, yeah, I grew up in Westchester County, which is the richest, one of the richest counties in the entire country. And I sort of did poverty tourism when I got an apartment that was already owned by my family in the Bronx. But that's beside the point. I'm from the Bronx, okay? That's what my driver's license says. Every time I get into my wildly expensive Tesla in Washington, D.C., in my apartment building where a studio is like $3,500 a month, I remind myself that I am just a poor girl from the Bronx by way of Westchester County and, you know, just miraculously has a clothing budget of a Hollywood starlet. But hey, that's beside the point. It's racist to point that out. She can do math. So can we. Can you afford all of these things? Sandy from the block. How can you afford all these things? Oh, is it maybe because, you know, your dad was an architect? And, you know, Mike Brady was not exactly living hand to mouth? That architects make a pretty good living? That you lived in a pretty nice area? Remember not that long ago she was whining about her abuela or whatever the hell her grandma, she calls her grandma. And her house is a disgrace. It's a disaster. So long after the hurricane. And like, well, why did you buy a Tesla then? Because I'm pretty sure you could patch a roof for the cost of, you know, I don't know, a tire on a Tesla. Maybe you could have helped grandma out instead of complaining about it. And then when a whole bunch of conservatives raised money to fix her grandma's house, she refused the money. She refused the money because she doesn't need the money. Her family's wealthy. She's pretending. It's a joke. It's a scam, but it works on these idiots. These are the same people who worship Bernie Sanders. Go, oh, he's so wonderful. And he's going, yeah, you're going to buy me the fourth house soon. I bet you the only reason Bernie Sanders hasn't bought a fourth house yet is because he hasn't found one that he wants. And there may be a voice in the back of his head going, this is going to be tough to explain. This is going to be tough to explain. Maybe. Just maybe. Doubtful, but maybe. These are the people running your government. This is the leader of the Democrats in the House of Representatives talking about things she clearly does not understand. Not only does she not understand them, she doesn't have the capacity to understand them. That doesn't stop her from being a media darling. This doesn't stop her from pressuring people, from sicking, again, her army of flying monkeys on people. Well, she did just that. These leftists did just corner a United States senator. We'll get to that in a second. But keep in mind, this is the intellectual leadership of the Democratic Party. And they want to fundamentally transform the United States of America into something they want. That should scare the hell out of you. So if it's scaring the hell out of you, if AOC's thoughts and the fact that she would be a... But that she is the de facto leader of Democrats scares the hell out of you. And you like your privacy. I want to play you some audio that is... there comes a point these people really need to... Well, they don't need to. I'm kind of glad that they do this. I want the world to see who they are. But it tells you something about these leftists, these progressive activists, that they can't control themselves. They are incapable of conducting themselves like decent, normal human beings. They just are. Kyrsten Sinema, senator from Arizona, apparently teaches a course at ASU out there. And it looked like a nighttime course. Now, if I remember correctly, most nighttime courses are like 2 days a week, 3 hours long, or they are 2 days a week, an hour and a half long, whatever it is. There's always a break in the middle of them. And during that break, everybody who needs to go to the bathroom goes to the bathroom. Everybody needs to go have a smoke, has a smoke. You go get something to drink. You do whatever you got to do. You get up and you stretch your legs. You get the blood flowing, right? Kyrsten Sinema does just that during her break. She goes and uses the bathroom. Well, there was a gang of illegal alien advocates, including illegal aliens, out there. They're part of a group called LUCHA, which stands for Living United for Change in Arizona. And it sounds just awful. Don't you wish them ill based on their name alone? I do. They confront Kyrsten Sinema. They follow her into the bathroom, including a dude. You're going to hear the dude's voice following her into the bathroom and yelling at her, trying to convince her that while she goes to the bathroom, there's never been a better time to lobby somebody about how you demand that they do your bidding. This is just a small snippet of it. They then went on to they followed her through the whole process, yelling and screaming as toilets flush. And then they go back to her classroom. She closes the door to keep them out. And they're outside screaming and chanting whatever stupid thing it is that they're doing, because this is what the left does. This is who they are. They are mindless drones. I've never seen a group of people more in desperate need of being led than these people.
Okay, I'll be back.
Sit down, we want to talk to you real quick. Want to talk to you real quick?
Hi, actually, I am heading out.
Right now is a real moment that our people need in order for us to be able to talk about what's really happening. We need a Build Back Better plan right now.
We knocked on doors. We need solutions. The Build Back Better plan has the solutions that we need.
We knocked on doors for you to get you elected. And just how we got you elected, we can get you out of office if you don't support what you promised us.
We need 7 million citizenship for 7 million. We need the Build Back Better plan right now.
My name is Blanca. I was brought here to the United States when I was 3 years old. And in 2010, my grandparents both got deported because of SB 1070. And I'm here because I definitely believe that we need a pathway to citizenship. My grandfather passed away 2 weeks ago, and I was not able to go to Mexico and visit him because there is no pathway to citizenship. And if we have the opportunity to pass it right now, then we need to do it, because there's millions of undocumented people just like me who share the same story or even worse things that happen to them because of SB 1070.
Oh, it's just terrible. I wasn't able to go visit my grandfather because he got deported because he's an illegal alien. Good. No offense, but good. I know I'm a horrible, horrible person. I don't care. I'm so sick of these people. Now, they follow her into the bathroom. You could hear the flushing. You could hear the... she eventually comes out and she washes her hands. Good for her. And then she goes back to class. All the while, these people are going, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, 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 yeah. Progressives on social media have been cheering this. Look at what they're doing. She does not deserve the rest. They went out and they protested outside of her home again that night. They stormed into a fundraiser that she was having. There, they are shining green lasers at the staff where she was holding the fundraiser, trying to blind them, because that's what the left does. They're evil, evil people, and they deserve bad things. And, you know, you should just be able to pepper spray these people whenever you want. But they were cheered by the intelligentsia on the left, by the establishment on the left. Now let's get into the Wayback Machine to a different time. February 28th, 2019. Fox News reports. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez lashed out at an anonymous Shutterbug who, quote, creepily snapped a picture of her at a restaurant with an aide who was feasting on a juicy burger, an image that soon made the rounds on social media as it was taken days after she questioned whether Americans needed to eat so much meat. Quote, tonight, a dude was creepily and obviously taking a picture of me while pretending he wasn't, and I had to break his imaginary fourth wall and say, hi, I'm a person, this is weird, she tweeted. And then, guess what? All of the left went absolutely crazy, accusing this, whoever this person was, of stalking, of being a monster. Why can't you just let this girl have her sandwich? She's just trying to nourish her body and her brain. And, well, clearly it's too late for that latter one. But still, why are you doing this, you creep? Meanwhile, three activists follow a United States senator into the bathroom. One of them's a dude. And they're yelling at her about how she should vote on what they want. And they're demanding amnesty. And this will be a testament to just how stupid these people are, to be honest with you. The amnesty aspect, the pathway to citizenship, the Senate parliamentarian has already said you can't have that in there. So that's dead. That's dead on this bill. And they're still going, we need this bill because of this provision that is no longer in it. Where do you live? Where did you go to school? I want to know so I can not only make sure my children never actually even set foot in that zip code, but I'd like to warn all the other parents that this is what's being taught in that school system, that your tax dollars, you would be better off simply eating them, taking them out and eating them, because it's being wasted on these people. It's unbelievable. But they think it's a great thing. It's wonderful. It's wonderful what they're doing to this United States senator, or so they say. The Daily Beast said that Kirsten Sinema is she was hiding. She ran away and hid. Their headline, Kirsten Sinema locks herself in bathroom to avoid young activists on ASU campus. It can't just be, you know, she had to go to the bathroom, and it was during the break in the class that she's teaching. No. Sinema locks door to bathroom stall as protesters demand answers. Written by some chick named A.J. McDougal. Does A.J. McDougal just do her business with the door wide open in a public restroom? That'd be interesting to see. It sounds to me like she's inviting anybody and everybody to go in there, cameras rolling, to find out. And if she doesn't leave the door open, it sounds to me like she's offering an open invitation to hover above the top of the stall or under the stall. That's just my layman's reading of her Sinema locks door to bathroom stall as protesters demand answers. Huh. If you think that's newsworthy and cool and justice, then what explanation do you have for it not happening to you? Do you have an explanation for it not happening to you, A.J. McDougal? No. She's the breaking news intern at the Daily Beast, so you know she's got a bright future ahead of her. A video posted on Twitter on Sunday by social justice group Living United for Change in Arizona shows youth organizers confronting Kirsten Sinema, even following her into a bathroom at one point. Now, these weren't youth. One of these ladies is quite old. She claims to be a member of the Lakota tribe. She's very proud. One of the things she said on social media was that her people gave the business to Custer. Okay, congratulations. You're one and everything else. Okay, fine. Not a record I would brag about, but who cares? I don't care about Custer, so what do you know? But if your greatest accomplishment is something you had nothing to do with that happened 150 years before you were born, I might suggest that your life has gone down a path that not good. I would say it's not good. I would say you're a pathetic human being. If you're like, yeah, well, people who are possibly, more than likely, maybe, who knows, related to me, did something a long time ago. Oh, yeah? Yeah, with overwhelming numbers, they killed a bunch of people. Oh, so, you know, wildly outnumbered the other people, and then you mercilessly slaughtered them. Okay. Congratulations. You know, is there a commemorative T-shirt I can buy or something? Like, I don't really know how that has anything to do with you. You're a loser chasing down a woman trying to pee during a break. So congratulations, I guess. This should be denounced by everybody. But since it wasn't denounced, it seems to me to be an invitation. An invitation to go after just about anybody and everybody. Now, Nancy Pelosi, she's probably beyond being able to harass in a bathroom. She has private bathrooms. She doesn't go anywhere near a public bathroom. Plus, she has an armed security detail that I'm sure is right down with her anti-gun agenda. But most of the rest of the members of Congress do not have armed security details. And besides, you're not going to do anything but harass them. You're going to, I mean, I'm sorry, not harass. You're going to do nothing but demand answers from them. This is a great opportunity for, I don't know what Talking Point or Turning Point USA does, aside from pay people to come to speak on college campuses. That's fine, I suppose. Not particularly productive in most cases because you end up preaching to the choir. But if they could also get activists, conservative activists, to go around college campuses, to go around anywhere, municipal buildings, wherever these Democrats are, and return the favor. What they've done, they're setting the norms, and they're setting the norms against themselves by going after Kyrsten Sinema like this. So then why couldn't a group of college students then go after AOC in the bathrooms, the halls of Congress, in her, probably not in her expensive apartment building, but she shops in the Whole Foods that's in the bottom of it. You wait around, it'll take shifts and everything, but you really have to be committed. And once the opportunity presents itself, you go and you demand answers and don't accept answers. Kyrsten Sinema did eventually give, while she wasn't busy going actually to the bathroom, she did talk a little bit to these people, but not much. She's going about her life. You want a meeting? Try and set up a meeting with her during business hours, not during bathroom hours. But don't take no for an answer from these Democrats and AOC. I'm sure she'll claim that it was just like being sexually assaulted. It will be horrible. It's something she can't live with. She's going to go into further therapy to try and get over this. But who cares? They've set the norms. They've got to live by these norms. Speaking of these norms, now this is insane. There's a guy named Chris Rabb. Chris Rabb, where is that tab about Chris Rabb? Chris Rabb is a member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives. So he's not a national Democrat. He's a Pennsylvania Democrat. He took to his Twitter account today to announce the following. God, these people are so stupid. And it was inspired by Illinois' lesbian lawmaker, arch nemesis of the good, the true, and the beautiful, and creator of the worst legislation. And a woman named Kelly Cassidy. Let's see. She said, lesbian, is she attractive? No. She needs to learn how to comb her hair. Anyway, he says, she's an Illinois lawmaker. She says, Chris Rabb, representative in Pennsylvania, says, I will be introducing a bill inspired by Representative Kelly Cassidy that requires all inseminators to undergo vasectomies within 6 weeks of having their third child or 40th birthday, whichever comes first. Additionally, and then he's got all these hashtags, repro justice, reproductive rights, abortion is healthcare. Why wasn't he aborted? I want to know that. He's a bald guy. He looks like he might be a man, a black man. Who knows? I bet he didn't say jack squat. He represents Philadelphia. I bet he didn't care too much about Kermit Gosnell. Maybe even been his district where it happened. Maybe Chris is sad that the slaughter has stopped. He says, my forthcoming bill will codify the definition of wrongful conception to include when a person has demonstrated negligence towards preventing conception during intercourse. And this legislation will allow Pennsylvanians to take civil actions against inseminators for unwanted pregnancies who wrongfully conceive a child with them. Isn't that what child support is already? Last, this bill will empower Pennsylvanians to enforce this prospective new law by offering a $10,000 reward for reporting to the proper authorities these scofflaws who have not complied with this statute within the allotted time frame. How much you want to bet that a rather large contingent of Congressman Rabb's constituency would fall under this category? How much you want to bet? He doesn't care. He's doing it for show. He knows this isn't going anywhere, but this is the left's instinct. They would love to sterilize and get to choose who gets to sterilize people, and they also would love to limit the number of children anybody could have. They look at China for all those years. They had the one-child policy, and they said, oh, if only we had that kind of power. If only we had that kind of ability. And I find that districts that tend to elect Democrats tend to be filled with more degenerate absentee fathers. So on that part, if you want to empower the general public to go after deadbeat dads, I'm right there with you. It's these people seem to think they're being clever, when realistically, that should be what government is passing laws about. Go after deadbeat fathers. Unfortunately, the deadbeat fathers might get arrested occasionally, usually in a drunk incident, drunk driving or drunk fighting or whatever. And then the prosecutor there in Philadelphia goes, we're not going to prosecute anybody on these things. It's a nonviolent offense. Yeah, child neglect, nonviolent offense. Liberals, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh, yes, they're evil. Evil. So looking at all of these, by the way, I just want to point this out. Let's, I'm going to play some theme music here, and it'll give away at least the show that I'm talking about. And then from there, we shall give you the exciting news about the star of the show, shall we?
Space, a final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Yeah, that's right. Star Trek. Now, when you think of Star Trek, you might think of Spock, but most people, everybody will get to Spock if you don't think of Spock first. But most people, I think of Captain Kirk. And William Shatner is still with us. He's still among us. And now there's breaking news about good old Captain Kirk. This from the Associated Press out of Cape Canaveral, Florida. Star Trek's Captain Kirk is skyrocketing into space this month, boldly going where no other sci-fi actors have gone. Jeff Bezos' space travel company Blue Origin announced Monday that William Shatner will blast off from West Texas on October 12th. That's next week. It's not even like you got time to plan. No. No, it's next week. At age 90, Shatner will become the oldest person in space. He'll join three others, two of them paying customers, aboard a Blue Origin capsule. It will be the company's second launch with a crew. Bezos was on the debut flight in July, along with his brother and the youngest and oldest to fly in space. Shatner will break the upper threshold by 6 years. Yes, the female astronaut was 84 when she went up there. And like, oh, it's great. She's now it's 6 years. That's going to be a tough record to break. Quote, I've heard about space for a long time now. I'm taking the opportunity to see it for myself. What a miracle, Shatner said in a statement. Also flying with Shatner, a former NASA engineer who founded a nano satellite company, the co-founder of a software company specializing in clinical research, and a Blue Origin employee. The up-and-down space hop will last 10 minutes and reach no higher than about 66 miles, or 106 kilometers. 10 minutes in space. I mean, you want to talk, this is genius marketing. I don't know who came up with this over at Amazon, but Bezos has got to give that person a raise, because that is a hell of a marketing gimmick to get Captain Kirk to agree to go up into space. Because I don't think, it's like $10 million. I don't think Shatner's got the money, I'm sure. But I don't think Shatner is going to be like, yeah, you know what, I'll just break off $10 million and go into space, or $50 million or whatever the hell it is. I don't think that's going to happen, especially for 10 minutes. Shatner's got kids, grandkids, great-grandkids, probably great-great-grandkids. At this point, I think that he's more likely being paid rather than paying to go on this trip. But still, how awesome is it that Captain Kirk is going into space? I think that's pretty damn cool. Pretty damn cool, if I do say so myself. I saw that and I was like, you want to talk, like when Jeff Bezos went up on the first one, you want to talk about pressure. You want to talk about pressure for the people on the ground, because there was nobody flies this thing, right? Nobody flies it. It's all autonomous. So you just kind of sit there and you go up and it's like riding shotgun in a drone, except nobody's in the driver's seat. That's what this is like. So you got the first flight, you got Bezos and his brother on there. And the brother less so is impressive. But Bezos, if you're working for the company and you crash the thing that has the owner of the company on it, your job security is not probably that solid. It's probably over for you. But I think that Bezos certainly isn't as beloved as William Shatner is. Nowhere near as beloved as William Shatner is. So while the people at Amazon probably wouldn't like you, the Amazon stockholders probably wouldn't like you because I imagine the stock would dip. There are a lot of people who have a lot of problems with Amazon. A lot of people have a lot of problems with Jeff Bezos. They wouldn't. Well, some of them sadly would cheer, but most of them wouldn't lose any sleep over anything either way. But if you are the guy who's responsible for something going wrong while sending William Shatner into space, I would venture to say, I'm not sure there's a more beloved actor alive today, to be honest with you. I can't think of somebody where everybody universally goes, oh yeah, Shatner, I could listen to him read the phone book. I could do that. No, I don't think there's anybody on the Shatner level. So if you thought you had pressure sending the world's richest man up there, that ain't nothing compared to sending the world's most revered actor into space. Talk about, I bet the pilot from down on Earth is going, you know what? I'm not going to feel too well on the 12th. Let the backup dude have it. But still pretty damn cool that William Shatner is going into space, if I do say so myself. Shifting it up a little bit here, I want to let you know that you have disappointed President Fauci. And as such, he is now in the process of determining whether or not you are worthy of celebrating Christmas. And unbelievable. You want to talk about somebody who is counterproductive. If you wanted to turn people off from the vaccine, Fauci's the way to go. If you wanted to turn people off from so-called experts, Fauci's the mouthpiece you want. Period. End of story. It's that simple. He was on CBS over the weekend. The CBS Face the Nation. And he was asked, you know, hey, is it too soon to talk about whether or not we can get together for Christmas? And he said, yep, way too soon. I'm paraphrasing because it's so damn stupid. Listen to the exchange for yourself.
We can gather for Christmas, or it's just too soon to tell?
You know, Margaret, it's just too soon to tell. We've just got to concentrate on continuing to get those numbers down and not try to jump ahead by weeks or months and say what we're going to do at a particular time. Let's focus like a laser on continuing to get those cases down. And we can do it by people getting vaccinated, and also in the situation where boosters are appropriate to get people boosted.
You ever notice that this guy never talks about any treatments? Any of the medicine Merck has asked for emergency use authorization for a drug that apparently cuts the prospect of hospitalization in half. Now, given the already low hospitalization rate, having the hospitalization rate cut in half or near half or whatever, anywhere even cut, would be a massive, massive improvement. That, along with monoclonal antibodies and other drugs and treatments that are being tested right now, would mean that we should be able to, you know, get back to normal, right? If we can cut the hospitalization in half, you already have what? The vaccines, really they're just immunity boosters. significantly reducing the number of hospitalizations already and the number of people who get sick and require hospitalizations. That's great news. You keep having that, and you get to the point where you're looking at, like, Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C., for the past 5 months, I believe it was, had more homicides than COVID deaths. All right? More homicides than COVID deaths. At some point, we have to accept victory. We will never have full eradication of this virus because that's nearly impossible. All other forms, almost every other virus out there, still exists. New Zealand, I'll tell you about New Zealand in a second, but they've been on lockdown. They've been a prison island for going on 2 years, and they still have COVID. They've been on lockdown in their own cities and everything. Like, well, we're still they've finally given up and said, all right, we're not going to be able to lock down our way out of this. It is sadly always going to be a part of us, or it will die out naturally once herd immunity happens and maybe enough variants roll through that we are able to just get past it. And it might end up being like a flu for everybody. It's a flu for most people, but it might be a flu for everybody. And that would be great. That would be wonderful. But to listen to Fauci talk, you can't ever get back to normal life, ever under any circumstances, because somebody somewhere might get sick from COVID. It's insane. It's dangerous. It's like the Democrats use this argument all the time when it comes to like the Second Amendment issues. If it saves just one life, if it saves just one life. Okay, if it saves just one, we should do things to save as many lives as possible. But are you willing to literally have your liberty stripped away from you if it saves just one life? If nobody left their house ever, if everybody were placed under house arrest and the government came by and they just gave you enough food to get by every day, and they'd give you, you know, that's it, and you can only go onto your porch. It would save lives. It would cost lives, too. See, that's the thing. The Faucis of the world, they don't look at the scale as having two sides to it. They look at it as just a podium, and they want nobody on that podium. Okay? So there's very few people on that podium, thank God. The numbers of deaths are going down. But numbers of deaths from other causes are going up. Overdoses, for example, depression, suicide, going up. You can't say that those are unrelated to people being placed under house arrest and kept away from everybody else. Speaking of the damage that, you know, non-COVID related COVID stuff has done, out of Australia, again, since Australia seems to be an example of bad things happening constantly. In Australia, the National Breast Cancer Foundation has estimated that there could have been more than 2,500 missed or undiagnosed breast cancer cases because of COVID lockdowns, because of COVID restrictions. You can't go anywhere. You can't do anything, blah, blah, blah. I think 2,500 missed diagnoses. Now, that's a guess. Could be higher, could be lower. So I did what anybody would do. I said, how many people have died of COVID-19 in all of Australia? The answer is about half that number. 1,334 deaths are attributed to COVID-19 in Australia. Remember that next time you see the police like beating people for going outside from Australia. That this is who the left is. They want the power. They need the power. And they're going, this is, we're saving lives. And in just this one, now that's just breast cancer. What about colon cancer, prostate cancer? What about cervical cancer? What about all the other possibilities? How many people were not diagnosed because they're scared to death? They're told by their government, this thing's coming to get you. Stay inside. You can't go anywhere. Don't do anything. Look out. It's coming to get you. And so they go, you know, I feel weird, but I'm not going to the doctor. I'm not going anywhere near a hospital. Hell no. That's going to, it kills people. It's horrible. It's horrible, horrible. So, yeah, Dr. Fauci, President Fauci and his little band of flying monkeys, they are doing more damage than good because they believe that we cannot get back to normal life unless and until the virus is eradicated. When in point of fact, we're just going to have to learn to live with it. It's not going to be fun. It's not going to be easy. Not going to be pleasant. I want you to listen to Gavin Newsom, the governor. Now, it's weird that he's now saying these things. He didn't say it before, the recall elections. He probably would have been damaged a little bit in the recall election, although he won by a wide enough margin that I'm not sure it would have mattered. But Gavin Newsom is, this is again how the left works. They want to be the first. They all want to be the first, and they never want to be the last to mandate something. So watch every other state start to fall like dominoes that are controlled by Democrats. He is mandating vaccines, even though they're not yet legal for kids, so it's not in place yet. But the second it is approved by the FDA, he is mandating vaccines for every student out there, K through 12.
And that's why we recognize our responsibility to do more, and that's what we are announcing here today. A statewide requirement for in-person instruction for all of our children to add to a well-established list that currently includes 10 vaccinations and well-established rules and regulations that have been advanced by the legislature for decades to add to that list the vaccination for COVID-19. We intend to do that once the FDA has fully approved the vaccine, which will give us time to work with districts, give us time to work with parents.
It'll be interesting to see, he says, as long as it's fully approved, as soon as it's fully approved. They're asking for emergency use authorization now. I wonder if that will be enough or if he'll actually wait for full approval. It'll be interesting to see. But if you live in California and you were looking for a reason to get the hell out of there, they keep giving it to you. And of course, to back him up, in rides on his silver steed, President Fauci. President Fauci is, I love this way. I've never seen him disagree with a Democrat. Never seen him disagree with a Democrat. Republicans, sure, constantly. But a Democrat, no. But don't worry, he's nonpartisan. He comes in and he agrees with Newsom out in California.
Well, I agree with what Governor Newsom did in California. I mean, I'm not going to getting into the local issues, only to talk about general principles that people need to realize that having a vaccine requirement for schools is not a new novel thing that is very peculiar or specific to COVID-19. We've been doing this for decades. My own children could not have gone to school if they had not gotten vaccinated with the measles, mumps, and rubella.
You got to love that. I don't want to get into the local things. And then all he does is talk about what other places are doing that are wrong. College football games. These are super spreader events. And they haven't been super spreader events. Barack Obama's birthday party. No big shake. Don't talk about that. Don't mention it. Pretend it didn't happen. What are you going to do? But people anywhere, you know, the motorcycle rally in Sturgis. Super spreader event. I wish they wouldn't be doing it. Hypocrites, every single one of them. None bigger than President Fauci. None bigger than President Fauci. He is being propped up like you wouldn't believe. You think Joe Biden is being propped up by the media? Fauci probably takes the cake. He's probably being propped up by a cake. That's how pathetic he is. Anyway, we are out of time for today. I sure do appreciate the use of your ears and the tolerance of my voice penetrating those ears. Have yourself a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow to do it all over again because the stupidity never, ever stops. Thanks for listening.
Well, I do math.